Genesis 2:24 says, "A man forsakes his father and his mother and clings to his wife, and they will become one flesh." The book of Proverbs has much to say about marriage. Let's take a look at God's blueprint for living about married life together.
It's time now for the program, Proverbs, a Blueprint for Living. Father Mitch Pacwa. And now, Father Pacwa.
God be with you. I'm Father Mitchell Pacwa, a professor of scripture at Loyola University in Chicago. And we're taking a look at the book of Proverbs as a blueprint for living. The book of Proverbs has many common sense, practical observations on life. And one very important set of observations about life is the issue of marriage. It takes a look at this theme of matrimony in its good side and in its negative side. And that's what we'd like to do today. We'll start to take a look at what are some of the problems, because even the problems show us something about the real value of marriage that the book of Proverbs portrays. The first one to look at is chapter 19 of the book of Proverbs, verse 13, where it says, "A calamity for a father is a foolish son." So if you have a son who's a fool, that's a complete calamity. And again, the kasil, the fool, might be the type of child who is an alcoholic that just causes calamity to the whole family, or a drug abuser, or someone who ends up a criminal. That becomes a calamity for the father. Both parents suffer. But then it goes on in relationship to matrimony. But the contentions or the arguments and the wrangling of a wife are a continuing dripping. Now, this is not the only place where they use that same image. Also in chapter 27, if you'd open up to that please, in verse 15, it says, "A constant dripping," or a dripping driving, to use alliteration in English, "a constant dripping on a rainy day and a quarrelsome woman are alike." Now, why do they compare it to dripping and on a rainy day? First of all, try to get in your mind a picture of the Israelite house, which had a roof that had boards on it, and then on top of the boards was a layer of soil, layer of dirt, earth, that would be packed down, and then on top of that was straw, so that when it rained, the water would go through the straw eventually, because sometimes they have just absolute downpours of rain in the autumn and the winter. And then eventually some of that muddy water would start to drip through the cracks in between the boards of the ceiling. Now, the constant quarreling between a husband and a wife, and it's, here it says wife because it's men talking, but this applies to husbands just as much. That kind of constant quarreling and arguing is like this muddy water dripping down mud in between the cracks of the ceiling onto the house. And it's just antagonizing. You can't do anything about it because it's raining outside. You don't know what to do to stop it right at that moment. And it just becomes a major annoyance, enough to drive people crazy with drip, 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 drip. Honey, do this. Honey, do that. Honey, do this. Please go do that. You will never do this. You're never this way. That kind of nagging constantly will drive married people crazy with each other. And that shows how horrible marriage might end up being at times. And what is it that prevents that constant dripping from going on? The only way for the ancient Israelite house to prevent that dripping is for it to be under constant repair. You have to always take care of the roof. So it has to constantly change the straw, make sure there's plenty of fresh straw, and keep the boards in good shape. Now that's a nice image for marriage. That the only way that a husband and wife can avoid that continuous nagging, pick, pick, pick kind of thing between each other, or, as more typical for the men, that I remember hearing one comedian say how he learned, after about 15 years of marriage, just how to shut his wife out. Says, "What, dear? Excuse me, I didn't hear you." And she said, "Oh, I'll just go do it myself." You know, men oftentimes find as a defense mechanism, "Oh, I didn't hear you. What did you say? Excuse me?" And louder, and then eventually just wear the wife down by not listening. All right? Now, that kind of disrepair of a marriage is like the disrepair of one of these Israelite house roofs. And instead of that, what we need to do is constantly be on the lookout to repair the relationship and repair the communication between a husband and wife, or else the drip, drip, drip of bad communication will drive people crazy. Now, that's not the only aspect of problems in the family that the book of Proverbs mentions. For instance, if you open up to chapter 21, verse 9, please, you'll see there that it is better to dwell in the corner of the housetop than to live in a large house with a quarrelsome woman. Oh, I know it applied to a quarrelsome man, too. Now, what is he saying? A lot of times in ancient Israel, people would live or sleep on the roof of their house because it was cooler. Remember, it can be very hot there in the summer. And there is no rain, no danger of rain in the summertime, I assure you. It just doesn't rain there. It's like California. It stays dry. Same kind of climate. So you could sleep on the roof without worrying about being rained on, at least until the wintertime or the fall. And people would oftentimes do that. But if you just live there constantly, that could be kind of lonely, kind of narrow, small quarters. You'd like to be able to live inside your own house. But this proverb is saying it's better to live alone on the roof in this part of the house where I'm all separated from everybody else and at least quiet than it is to live with a spouse who is quarrelsome in a great big house. Because no matter where you go in a big house, the quarrelsome spouse will find you and follow you. Now, that is also a very important aspect of us to keep in mind. That people who are quarrelsome and constantly nagging and not communicating in a legitimate way, are going to drive each other crazy and drive each other far away. It's no wonder we have such a high divorce rate. People drive one another away. What makes the difference between that kind of quarrelsome communication and argumentation and good, solid, healthy communication? First of all, I believe that it's essential for a spouse or people in religious community, because we have the same problems at times, it's essential to communicate honestly, but without judgment. Now, here's what I mean. It doesn't mean that you don't point out a problem. You have to point out the problems. As the Proverbs say, if you don't mention the problems and deal with them, the problems will just get worse. But there's a way to communicate a difficulty and say, when you constantly drip, drip on me, when you kind of, scrape away at my life, when you nag me, when you put, whatever it is that bothers you, when you do this to me, then I feel angry because you're not paying attention to me. When you are constantly at work and not paying attention to me at home, then I feel angry because I feel left alone or rejected. Now, that is not saying I hate you or that you're a bum or that you're a bad husband or a bad wife. Saying, I can't deal with this. Now, that's an important thing. If we can learn to start to communicate without blaming, then we'll end up preventing a lot of fights. Because as soon as you judge somebody, so you say, well, if you weren't such a jerk, we wouldn't have this problem. If you weren't such a lout, we would be in a better house. As soon as you get into that kind of judgment with your spouse, then they have to defend themselves. They have to. And they can't really communicate what's in their heart. They become hardened and defensive. That's what we have to avoid. We took a look at some of the negative sides of marriage that are presented as observations of marriage in the book of Proverbs. And some observations about poor communication as one of the real causes of trouble in marriage. People become quarrelsome because they don't know how to share with one another and communicate without being judgmental. and then therefore defensive. And when people get defensive, they become judgmental right back. And the quarrel goes back and forth over and over again. But that's not all that's about marriage in the book of Proverbs. The book of Proverbs has great respect for the institution of marriage and for women, by their husbands especially. And this is going to be a very key point for us to look at. Let's take a look. If you look at chapter 12, verse 4 in the book of Proverbs, where it says, "A good wife is a crown to her husband. One who acts badly is like rottenness in his bones." Now, let's think about that. How do you relate to your wife or to your husband? And is your spouse like a crown on your head? A crown accents the beauty. A crown is something that draws attention to your face because of the flowers or the gold or the jewels that might be on it. And so is it with a wife. But that can, or with a husband. But that can only take place if you have great honor for your spouse. And the more that you see this goodness in your spouse, the more that they become something that gives you honor. And this needs to be one of the aspects that we have in marriage. That husbands and wives look to see the differences between each other and the similarities and honor them. Honor those differences. Respect and say, "This is wonderful. You are not a man. That's great. That's why I married you. You are not a woman. That's why I married you. And therefore, because you are different than I am, you have different reactions. I may not always understand your reactions. You know, I don't know why women want to talk everything out and men want to just do something. But it's a difference I want to honor and respect and really grow to appreciate." And in that way, what we can see is that a husband finds his wife as a crown. Otherwise, it becomes a rottenness that goes down deep and will destroy marriage, destroy that institution that God established for us. Instead, we have to really seek ways to show honor to the other, not to have a sense of control, not to have a sense of domination, not to have a sense of beating the other's partner down or winning over them. It's not that kind of contest in life. Life isn't meant to be that sort of competition, but rather a respect that's mutual for each other. Now, he also says here, in chapter 11, verse 16, a very interesting proverb of contrast. The antithesis here is that a gracious woman obtains honor. A violent man obtains wealth. Now, what are they saying there? A man who might be stronger, tougher, who might be, you know, sort of a Rambo type or something, might be able to get wealth, might be able to get things. And you know, this proverb really gets at some observations of life. Because a lot of times men will identify themselves by what they can accomplish. They'll say, "I can do that. I did that. I got this. Look at my toys. I got great toys. It's a big truck. It's a houseboat. It's a boat. You know, I got all sorts of neat toys." And that's what a man will be very much in favor of, that this is what he looks to for his own identity very frequently. We look to what we can accomplish. Whereas here he's saying a woman who is gracious in her nature is far superior and far more honored than the man with all the toys, the man with all the things, all the goods, and all the wealth that he got by his violence. That does not give him real respect and honor. But rather, the woman who has the characteristic of being gracious in her own way of acting towards people from her very heart, who's kind and loving, that woman is honored. And of course, we're to draw a lesson from that, that we men are also to be gracious, compassionate, kind, as well as strong, and use our strength to be compassionate and gracious, and let honor be on us as well. Another proverb that I think is also just a wonderful, wonderful text, is where it says about the relationship between a good wife and God. If one finds a good wife, it is a good in itself. It is inherently good to find a good wife. And a favor bestowed on a husband by Yahweh. Now, there are a couple other proverbs that related to this. That a good wife is someone that Yahweh has given to you. There's another proverb that says you can inherit household and goods from your fathers. But a good wife is a gift from Yahweh. Now that gets at the same idea. And with this is to have such a sense that your marriage is not simply something that you fall into. We have to be so careful that you don't just fall in love and then, oh, I've got to get married, something like that. We have to take another look at marriage. Yahweh gives you your spouse because your marriage is not just a job or a task, but a marriage is a vocation. Now, what does vocation mean? First of all, vocation comes from the word vocare, to call. And marriage is something that God calls you to. God calls you to this state of matrimony. And God calls you to your spouse. Now, there'll be many people that you'll be attracted to. Many people that you fall in love with, perhaps, at first sight. And why is that? Often because they remind us of the first woman we loved, or the first man we loved, namely our parents. That a woman that we fall mad in love with has some real idealized quality of our mother, or a man might have an idealized quality of a father, and a man or woman will fall in love with them because of that ideal. They just trigger memories that, oh yeah, that's just like something that I remember from my very youth. And you just fall in love with them. And that's great. That's normal. We should expect that. We were raised by parents, and they showed us what the first love of somebody of the opposite sex would be. But that's not enough. Can you take time to pray over a sense that marriage is a vocation that God calls you to? And to take time to discern and see, is God calling us to this marriage? And will God be the center of this marriage? That this will be a grace, a favor from God. And the only way to not only find that and sustain it through every day of your married life is through deep prayer and a close relationship with Christ. And so make sure that we come to that close relationship to Christ. We have to make sure that our own relationship with God is the center of our marriage and God is first. If we love God first in our lives, we'll end up loving our spouses much, much more than if we had put them first. Let's take a look at family life and married life and the communication between a husband and wife by talking to some more of my friends who have lived through the issues of good communication with each other. I'd like to introduce some very good friends of mine, Joe Williams and Mary Williams, a couple who live in Nashville, Tennessee, and have been good friends since I started graduate school back in 1979. And I'd like to ask them some questions about their own relationship as husband and wife. Joe and Mary, you've been married now for almost 19 years, is that right?
That's right.
What do you do when you're quarreling? Some things work and some things don't. Well, what works for you and what doesn't work?
Well, for the most part, I, as a woman, I have a hard time quarreling sometimes because I feel like it's not ladylike or it's not my place.
Uh-huh.
So sometimes I won't, or I didn't for a number of years, and I don't think that's healthy.
Yeah.
I think you should both be able to quarrel equally.
Yeah, I think the key is to focus on the issues that you're differing on as opposed to when we start to attack each other or bring up things from the past. I mean, there's ways to fight fair and have a disagreement, and then there's fair ways to be very unfair. And I think when you want to end it and come back and start over is when we're being attacking of each other in a way of that's not only unchristian, but just the wrong way. Just the wrong way to approach your best friend. No, it didn't make any sense to do it that way. And you're not accomplishing anything other than making both people miserable. So I think when we can focus on the issue, you know, talk about how we feel about certain things, you know, it's important to do that and do it in a mature way. Through her being more vocal about how she feels. It's helped me. I express my feelings, and we can have these fair disagreements, if you will.
Sometimes when people quarrel, they express their feelings. They say, I feel that you're being really stupid about this, which is not really a feeling. No, that's a judgment. What do you do when a feeling or an expression of what seems to be a feeling becomes part of the weaponry this becomes part of the quarrel. Do you have any ways to diffuse that?
Well, I think that's going to happen from time to time, but if you... Joe and I are best friends, and I think if you remember that, and you know, you don't want to purposely make your best friend feel bad, call him names or anything like that. It's going to happen from time to time, but as long as you just remember that this is your friend and, you know, treat them with respect. But there are times you forget that and you start over the next day.
Yeah, I think what happens is when you make those judgments or you make those, again, those statements like that, I mean, the other person, we do it, you say, you know, you're not being fair. You're attacking me. You're not telling me how you feel. So I think, you know, we do that. I think the key is not to be, try to be too loud or, in my case, too domineering in the discussion. I think, keeping it low key is, that's very healthy for us. And a lot of times we find it, I think, just getting away from the house sometimes, going for a ride or going to have a meal and discussing issue works better for us. Take a walk around the block as opposed to the kids running around, the phone's ringing or the TV's blasting.
You walk together?
Yeah,
we've done that from time to time. It's kind of hard to yell at each other going down the street. Neighbors would see you.
The other thing, too, you'd said at one time, Joe, was about the reconciliation process. Isn't it that diffuses the argument too?
Yeah, we can. We've had our share of Donnybrooks, and I think the key is though we've gone back and reconciled real quick, and normally the same day, because we are good friends, and you know we want to deal with the issue, and usually within a matter of hours, and as we go through that process, then we can talk calmly about the issue because we both want to get things straightened out, and you know, either ask for forgiveness and tell each other we love each other, and then talk about the issue a little calmer. Now that may still, the disagreement may still be there,
yeah.
but you can deal with it in a better environment.
All right. Now we talked about some of the negative stuff. What are some more positive things that you see in marriage? What do you see that's a real benefit from marriage?
My career has been very, very demanding, and to have such confidence in your spouse in terms of the household, the children, when I travel quite a bit, and that the children are under the care of someone who loves them very much. We share the same goals for them. We unfortunately share the same Christian faith and Catholic Christian faith and raise them in that environment.
And I've been able to stay home and be the family person. And so I think that's been a plus in our marriage.
Joe and Mary, I really want to thank you a lot. I mean, your friendship has meant a lot to me over the years, and I appreciate you being on the show. And I hope that all of us can gain some help from the practical experience that perhaps this will sort of resonate with your own experience of marriage and some of the things that you can do at your best moments and how you can avoid some of the moments that weren't your best so that all of us can grow a little bit more close to the ideal that God wants us to have with the practical wisdom from Proverbs and your married life. God bless you.
Thank you.